Parshas Shmini, we find in the Sedra, this was the Shmini Limiluim, was the eighth day, the final day of the inauguration of the Mishkan. And it was also Rosh Chodesh as well, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And we find in the Sedra how on this day, Nadav and Avihu, which were Aaron and Cohen's sons, they were both killed by Hashem. And as a result, Aaron and his remaining sons, Eleazar and Itamar, they were mourners, called Onanim. And when it came time for eating the korbanos of this day, they ate of the korban of the eighth day of the inauguration, the special korban for that, but they did not eat of the korban of Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Instead, they burnt it completely on the Mizbeach. And when Moshe heard this, he got angry. And he said, "Why didn't you eat of the korban? Why did you burn it?" So Moshe assumed that they should have eaten it, even though they were mourners, just like they ate of the korban of the inauguration of the Mishkan. So too, they should have eaten the korban of Rosh Chodesh. However, Aaron knew differently. He knew that it's not the same, it's a different type of korban, since the korban of the inauguration of the Mishkan was like a one-time thing during the inauguration, whereas the korban of Rosh Chodesh is kavua, is set for generations. And such a thing, they're not allowed to eat as mourners. Anyways, after Aaron Cohen explained this to his brother, the correct halacha, that in fact they were not supposed to eat the korban, it says in the pasuk, Ve'ishma Moshe ve'itav beina. Moshe heard what Aaron had to say, and it was good in his eyes, literally. And Rashi says, Hoda v'lo bosh lomar lo shamati. Moshe Rabbeinu was not embarrassed to say he didn't hear. Ela amar shamati v'shachachti. Rather, he said, "Yes, the truth is, I did hear of this halacha. Now that you mention it, my brother Aaron. However, shachachti, you know, it slipped my mind. I forgot." So the question is asked: what was so praiseworthy of Moshe Rabbeinu, this Maila that he admitted that he forgot? What was he supposed to lie? What was he supposed to say? Yeah, I knew that, Aaron. I was just testing you. If he really did forget it, which he did, obviously wouldn't have said he forgot if he hadn't. So, of course he's going to admit that he forgot. Why was he going to lie and say he didn't? So what's his tremendous praise? Ah, Moshe Rabbeinu, he admitted, and he wasn't embarrassed to say that he had forgotten the halacha. He's not going to lie. So I saw once in the Sefer Tam Badas, he explains, Moshe Rabbeinu actually had a good reason to lie over here. Why? Not some lie, of course, but lie, l'shem shamayim. Because if people might say, look, Moshe Rabbeinu, he forgot. He forgot Elach over here. And he's the main transmitter of the whole Torah. So who knows? Just like he forgot this Elach, who maybe forgot other things as well. Maybe he's making mistakes, and he's telling us these mitzvahs and those mitzvahs. Maybe he's making mistakes here and there. He can make a mistake here, he can make a mistake other places as well. And as a result, it could really have its effect on the entire Torah. It can ruin the whole infrastructure of the Torah, since Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that transmitted the Torah. And therefore, even so, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't take this into account, and he said, no, I have to admit what's the truth, and I forgot this halacha, and so he told everybody. The question is, I think, obvious. Now the Havamin is so good. Why did he tell the truth? Luchor, he should have lied. He should have said something like we said before. I don't know. Oh yeah, I was just testing you, Aaron, or something like that. Because, like we said, maybe people will now say, "Hey, if you really forgot this Moshe Rabbeinu, maybe you forgot other things as well." And that was what we're praising him that he didn't admit that he did something wrong. Or maybe he should have admitted, he shouldn't have. Maybe he should have lied to save the Torah. Not only that, we find something very strange, that the Targum Yonasan, Ben Uzio, he translates this over here, and he says, V'afke kruza l'mashrisa l'meimar. Moshe Rabbeinu made a cruise. He sent out an announcement, no less. And he said, Ana hu de is'almis hilchasa meni. He says, I forgot the halacha escaped me. Okay, V'aran achi adkerli. And my brother Aaron, he reminded me. He sent out a cruise. It was bad enough that the people around him, you know, heard that he admitted he made a mistake and he forgot the lacha. But why did he go ahead? He announced it to everybody? Again, I mean, it's a pella. Wasn't he worried that people are going to, you know, start thinking maybe the whole Torah, you know, a lot of Torah maybe was things that you forgot Moshe made, as we asked. I think the answer to this question is actually rather simple. But we'll, Makdim will give an introduction based on something I heard from Rav Levinstein Shlit. Back to Parsha Shmos, beginning of Parsha Shmos. We have the Parsha with the midwives. Paro comes to the midwives and he says to them, V'yomer b'yalachenet ivriyot risen alav naimim ben huvamit en oso bim baschi v'chai. He tells the midwives, calls them over, says, listen, I want you to kill all the boys that are born. And he goes to Shifra and Pua, the main midwives, which is, of course, Yocheved and Miriam, as we know. And he told them that's what they have to do. So it says, V'tiren ha-miladoz es ha-lokim, V'lo asu kasher diber alei ha-melech mitzrayim, V'techayen ha-silini, but they didn't listen, they feared God, and instead they let the kids live. Okay. So what happened? The obvious. Paro calls them over and says, excuse me, why'd you do this? Why did you let the boys live? I told you to kill the boys. How could you let them live? So what did they answer? They said to Paro, listen, Paro. We'll tell you what happened. The Jewish women are not like the Mitzrim. Why? Ki chayas hayena. They're like animals. V'terem tavo aleihem hamiyaladus v'yaladu. Before the midwife has a chance to even come to them, they already gave birth. So just, you know, it's not our fault. We can't kill the boys as they're being born because the women get birth by themselves. We're not there b'chlal. So how are we supposed to kill them? So the question here is, we'll give a mashal, right? So the guy is working, he's advertising as being a, let's say, a washing machine repairman. Okay, he repairs a washing machine. So you go up to the guy, and he says, excuse me, I understand you're a washing machine repairman? He says, yeah. And you're qualified? He goes, oh yeah, very qualified. Okay, and you service different types of machines? He goes, oh yeah, no problem, I serve all type of machines. Yeah. And do a good job, huh? 100%, I'm very experienced. I says, oh. And tell me something, how's business? He goes, oh, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. It's going okay. He says, okay, very good. So tell me something, how many machines do you repair every day? And he says, oh, well, no, you see, the people in this town where I live, well, they wash by hand. So they don't use a machine. So what would we say to them? What's going on over here? This guy says he's a washing machine repairman. Fixes all tires. Parnassus, fine. But they don't, what kind of washing machine repairman? Everybody washes by hand. That's not called a washing machine repairman. Korah, the same question over here. Who did Paro call? The Mialados Sevrios, the Jewish midwives. And then when he says to them, hey, how come you didn't kill the boys? There's no need for midwives. They give birth by themselves. Well, they give birth by themselves. How are you called midwives? And why are you wearing the tag on? You say the Jewish chief Jewish midwife. And what kind of a midwife are you? That's an answer. They don't need midwives. So how can you be a midwife if they don't need midwives? So the answer is that what we saw in the pasuk. The pasuk says v'tirena hamildos ha'tzalukim. It's true. The answer was quite silly, so to speak. Right? How could they say they're not? They don't need for midwives if they're called the chief midwife. But how did it work? Why did Pharaoh accept such a thing? Because v'tiren hamilnas etzalukim. In other words, had the midwives, let's say, saved the boys for their own personal reasons, to save their own necks, or not to save their necks, because they were humane, and they said, oh, how can we kill these poor boys, and what can we do, and I just can't kill them, or something. It was for just their own personal reasons, then perhaps such an answer wouldn't have worked. But since the reason why they didn't kill was because of their fear of God, when a person trusts in God, then they have nothing to worry about. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of things. All Hashem asks you is to love Him, to fear Him, to follow in His ways. If you do what Hashem wants, then you can be rest assured that everything will be taken care of. And so to hear, their remark was not something that Pharaoh should have accepted. But again, since these are God-fearing people, and they did what they did because they're God-fearing people, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of them, and everything worked out. In fact, it's very interesting, what does it say right after this, and after this comment? It says in the next pasuk, listen to this, Vayitev Elokim lamiladot, Vayirev Ham, Hashem did good to these midwives, and Vayirev Ham v'yatzmu me'od, that the Am became great, very, very great. As we know, Chazal tell us, started giving birth six at one time. Meaning, Hashem covered for them. Hashem covered up. I mean, they gave this crazy answer. Well, they give a lot of, they don't need us. What happened? They really didn't need them after. In other words, afterwards, Hashem did, in fact, cover up for them and had the women give birth a lot. So far as to say, oh yeah, wow, I see they are giving birth a whole bunch at a time. This is like supernatural. Like I see that they don't really need these midwives. So in other words, Hashem covered for them. So when a person goes and follows Hashem's ways and fears Hashem, Hashem takes care of the situation. Another example similar we find by Esther and Malka in the Megillah. Right, Mordechai tells Esther, listen, Esther, it's a very grave situation. You have to go into the king. So she says, listen, I haven't been called to the king for the last 30 days. And if a person's not called into the king, you don't just walk into the king. That means your life. But Mordechai says to her, no, you got to go. So she says, listen, I got to go. But she felt that was it. She's going to go. This is going to be the end of her life. In fact, Chazal even tell us that when she went in, the other women started, they took her clothes, and they started dividing out. Here, you take this dress of hers, that, because they figure that's it, her life's over, we might as well, divide out her clothing that she's going to leave behind. It was so certain that she was going to be killed. But again, Esther Malka, Tzedakis, she went, she listened to God of the door, her husband Mordechai, and she's, like we said, like the Miladosh, she was following Ratzon Hashem. And as a result, she really didn't have anything to worry about. Hashem is going to take care of things. And so he did. What happens, we know. She comes in. The Achashverosh doesn't kill her. Fact is, what would you like? What can I give you? And she says, I want to come to a party tomorrow. So he came to the party. And then what? And she says, I want you to come again tomorrow to the party. And Achashverosh says, okay, no problem. Another party tomorrow. She says, not killing her, laughing, asking what she wants, listening to whatever she says. And then, finally, the clincher, Achashverosh then asked again, what would you like? So she says, listen, Kinin Karnu Ani Vamila Shmid LaRog, listen, my people have been sold to be wiped out. And what is Achashverosh? So, Miu Zevei Zuhu, right? Who was the one that wanted to wipe you out, and you and your nation? So Chazal tells us the Gemara Megillah that Esther, listen to this, she points at who? Achashverosh. As if to say, you're the rascal, you're the villain that wants to wipe out my people. She pointed her finger at Achashverosh. But what happened? A malach came and pushed her, an angel came and pushed her finger until she pointed at Haman. And when she said the words, East Sarvayev, right, this enemy of mine. And it ended up, she pointed to Haman. Haman haraz, as it says. So what do we see? Same idea. Esther went with Hashem. Right? Everything was the Kodesh Baruch Hu. As a result, whatever happens is going to work out. Nothing to worry about. Points her fingers at Achashverosh. Finger gets pointed to Haman. Whatever Hashem wanted, that's what's going to happen. You have nothing to worry about. Person goes with Hashem, everything will work out in the end. So too, therefore, with Moshe Rabbeinu, back to our question, how could Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, tell the truth that he forgot what's going to be with the Torah? It's a kashif. To us, it's a kashif. But not for someone who goes with Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu said, listen, I have a mitzvah to tell the emes, and I'm going to do what's right and follow what Hashem wants. I don't have to worry that anything's going to happen bad. Oh, what are people going to say about the Torah? That's not my concern. I'm sure things will work out. They did, right? We believe in the Torah, and Moshe Rabbeinu to this day, despite the fact that he says he forgot that one halacha, it is an effect thing. And Moshe Rabbeinu knew that. I don't have to worry. Hashem's going to take care of things. And he did. Find this idea. This idea answers a lot of things, difficulties that people have in the Torah. For example, Shemitah. Right? What kind of a thing? A person, especially in the old days, a person's Jew's livelihood was the field. It is agriculture. That's how they lived. So how can you tell a person once in 7 years to leave the every seventh year, the nuts it, don't go to work, leave your parnasa, go learn, whatever, for a whole year? How can you tell a person, okay, it's one thing one day a week, Shabbos, maybe, but a whole year of no work? How can there be such a thing? So again, it's a kasha. But if someone who follows the Torah and believes in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's not a kasha. Why? Hashem will take care of things. How? The Torah even says, you're going to ask. Hashem says, don't worry, you're going to have extra produce on the sixth year, etc. Somehow Hashem will make things work out. Someone who believes in Hashem, trusts Hashem, he knows it's not kasha. Another example, ribbis, right? Lending with interest. Okay, the whole world revolves around interest, right? Why do people give their money to banks? Because they love the banks, I want to help them out? No, they give the money to banks because they get interest, right? That attracts people to put their money in the bank, so they receive some money from it, interest. And then banks, they collect all money from all these people, and then what do? With it? They just put it in a drawer and lock it up. No, they lend it out with the higher interest. And then also, the whole system revolves around interest. Along comes the Torah and says, no interest. Well, I mean, no interest. What are you supposed to do? I have to give the guy money. I don't get anything back from him. My money's not working for me. How can I? The answer is, don't worry. How can you? What will be? If you listen to Kodesh Baruch Hu, everything will work out. You don't have to worry. Another classical example, the question of a guna, right? A woman that's her husband doesn't give her a get, doesn't divorce her, and he runs away. Whatever, she's left without a husband, and she can't remarry. And so everybody cries out, "Oh, this is not fair! What kind of a Torah is this going against women? It's not fair to the poor women." Whatever. Again, to a goy, it's a good kasha, right? Goy would ask, "It's not fair. It looks not fair." But since a Kodesh Baruch Hu and a Torah behind this, not a kasha at all. Why? And obviously, it's meant to be. Hashem's in control. If she ended up being an aguna, then she, for whatever reason, deserves it. We don't know. We don't know the cheshbonos, but Hashem knows. And nothing could happen without Hashem that's controlling. So if she ended up being aguna, and her husband, like, if you're a get, for some reason, Hashem decided that's what is necessary for her, for whatever reason. And when it'll be necessary that she should not be in a good shalom, her husband will give her a get. Hashem's behind everything. Right? If we just trust in Hashem and do what he wants, then we can rest assured that everything's in control, which it is. One last example of this, we find a story with this one of the Av Beis Din of the Eidei Charedus, Rav Freind. So his grandfather was a Rav in Hungary. And he was very close with the Malchus, and the king gave him a gift once. He was close to the king. So the king gave him a walking stick. This is a wooden walking stick, and on the top was a golden cross. So he was didn't know what to do. Right, he received this gift. Whatever he does, if he's going to walk, how can he walk around with a stick with a cross on it? He can't do that. But if he's not going to use it, also, it's going to say, hey, where's the gift I gave you? You know, how come you're not using it? And if he throws away the cross, whatever, also, no matter what he does, he say, darned if you do, darned if you don't. So, what did he do? He took a saw and cut off the gold cross, which of course he didn't want to use, did away with it, and he used the walking stick without the cross. So of course, the next time the king saw him, says, hey, what's going on over here? So he says, why? This is the walking stick you gave me. He goes, I see that, says the king. But where is the cross? So the Rav thought for a minute, and he said, well, you see, it's like this. It was too tall. And the walking stick was too tall, so it was very cumbersome. It was uncomfortable. So therefore, I cut off the top so I can, be more usable. So the king says, wait a second. If the stick was too tall for you, so why didn't you cut off the bottom? Why'd you cut off the top? He says, oh, no, come on. He says, I'm surprised at you, king. You should realize the bottom was fine. The bottom reached the floor. It was the top part that was uncomfortable. What happened? The king accepted it. Right? Like we saw by the midwives, right? If a person goes with Hashem, you can say what you want to say. Say that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to make things work out. And people will accept what you say. It's all a matter of a person's emunah and bitachon in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I'd like to conclude with a story, which also goes along these same lines. It's a story that was told over yearly by the Admor Mirinov. And the Divrei Chaim, he heard the story from him. And he used to say it every year, I think, by the Pesach Seder. We'll see in a minute why. This occurred in Poland. It was printed, actually, in Poland over 70 years ago. And the Mice was with Rav. His name was Rav Yitzchak Nunes. He was from Turkey, Constantinople. And he was a yoetz of the king. He was the counselor, the king's counselor. Very close to the king. And they used to, daily used to come to the king, and the king used to, ask him things, or whatever. Ask him for advice. And the story goes that one evening, he doesn't show up. Didn't come to the king's palace. So the king said, that's strange, because Yitzchak always comes. So he decided to go to his house. And he noticed there was something going on there. What was going on? It happened to be Leila Seder night. And Rabbi Yitzchak was, of course, doing the Pesach Seder, running his Pesach Seder. So the king came in, and he said, what's going on over here? So he said, well, it's a Jewish ritual. And so the king, can I stay and watch? He said, sure, go ahead. Anyway, so he was watching, came to Shulchan Aruch, or before, and time to wash and eat the matzah. So the king said, what is this? It looks weird. He says, can I try some of that stuff? What is that? He said, we call it matzah. You mind if I eat some? So he says, sure. So the king takes a bite of the matzah. Says, wow, this is unbelievable. I've never tasted something so delicious in my life. He says, wow, this is great. He says, I'm glad you like it. Okay. Anyways, he was so taken aback by the matzah, he couldn't believe it. There was a tam of Gan Eden to him. So he said, listen, can I have some more? I want to take back to my wife and the queen and give her some. I've never tasted something like this before. I said, sure, go ahead. So he took some more matzah, came back. He was in the seventh heaven. He says, I got to show you something, tells his wife. I tasted this stuff. And she looks at the matzah. This? He goes, yeah, taste it. So she takes a bite. She goes, wow, you're right. This stuff is unbelievable. The Jews eat this? Yeah, we had to eat it tonight. She says, oh no, this is great. So he had an idea, right? The next day, he had planned a party, like a birthday party for himself. And so he had an idea. So as a surprise, as a special surprise for the guests, he was going to serve them all a piece of matzah. So the people came, and the king announced, now I have a special delicacy, something you've never tasted before. You're going to see, this is unbelievable. Huh? So he breaks off some pieces, and he hands it out to the crowd. So they bite it, and to them it tasted like dried bread, which is basically what it is. And they're, they didn't want to say anything, so yeah, it's delicious. But the king could see from their faces that they were not enjoying themselves too much. So he said, what's going on over here? So he turns to the paki. The paki is the Muslims, it's there like what the Christians have a bishop. Right, the Muslims have a bishop. It's called a paki, and he turned to him and he said, "What's going on over here? I don't understand. I ate it last night by Rav Nunes, and it was so delicious and everything. And now I took this other piece, and give it out to people, and now it's people that's not tasting. What's going on? I don't understand. So the Paki said to him, I'll tell you why. Want to know why? He says, you know why it tasted so delicious? Because the piece you had last night was from the Seder. Now on Leil HaSeder, you see the Jews, they smear their matzah with pig fat. Right? And that's what gives it such a delicious taste. And the other pieces that you took, or other pieces from the box or whatever, that were not smeared with thing, that's why it doesn't taste good. Oh, when the king heard that, he got angry. Why? Because the Muslims are, it's asr for them, forbidden for them to eat pig. So he saw that he knew that Reb Nunes knew this, and he wanted to marshal him. He wanted to cause him to eat something that is forbidden to the Muslim. Ooh, to the king to do such a thing? That's of course a fate that deserves death, instant death. So he calls immediately Rav Yitzchak, and he says, "What's going on? I heard the matzah last night was delicious. This matzah wasn't. So my paki told me the reason is because you smear it with pig fat, and that's why. How can you give it to me? You know that we don't eat pig fat, and you deserve to be killed." So Rav Yitzchak said, he didn't have an explanation, you know, because it tasted good last night, not good. So the king says, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 3 days to give me an answer. If you don't come with an answer that's satisfying within 3 days, off with your head. So, Yitzchak's like, what am I going to say? You know. So he goes to sleep that night, and he has a dream. And Eliyahu and Avi comes to him in his dream, and he says, don't worry. Just go back to the king, and I'll put the right words in your mouth. He says, okay. So next morning, goes to the king. King says, oh, what, you ready to have an answer? So he says, well, I don't exactly have an answer, but I have a question. He says, well, what? He says, I have a question. He says, if the paki told you the reason why it tasted so good last night is because we smear pig fat on it, right? And that's why it tasted so good. Now, I have a question. If pig fat is usr to the Muslims, how did he know that it tastes so yummy? It tastes so delicious, right? It's usr to you. It's usr to him. So how did he know that it tastes so good? That's my question. So the king thought, you know, you got a point there. Never thought of that. So Yitzchak said, I think we should go find this paki now and speak to him. Let's see what he has to say. King says, you okay? You're right. Let's go. So he went to his place where he lives, where he stays, and they came to the house, and there was a guard at the door. He says, yes, what can I do for you? He says, well, we'd like to see the paki. He says, sorry, you can't. He's now doing his meditation and in his room, and he's at this point he goes up into the heavens, and he's dealing with the lofty things in the high heavens, so he's not around now, there's nobody to speak to. So Yitzchak's thinking to himself, yeah, right, okay. But he says, okay, but still we'd like to go in, this is the king, we have a right to enter. Okay, so they go into the, so they go to the room where the Shomer said he's in this room over here, so the guard, so they knock on the door, there's no answer. So they quietly open the door. The room's empty. So the guard looks and he says, see, I told you. He's in heavens right now. I told you. I saw him walk in the room, and I'm guarding the door. And then you don't see him because he went up to the... I told you. So again, Rav Yitzchak's right. Okay, you mind if I, walk around a little bit in the room? He says, sure, go ahead. You want to wait for him? Go ahead. So the king and Rav Yitzchak go in the room, and Rav Yitzchak starts looking around. He says, there's got to be a trap door somewhere. And I says, okay, so he's looking around. Ah, he sees on the wall, like a carpet hanging on the rug, hanging on the walls, decoration. So he moves the rug aside, and sure enough, there's a door. Aha, the trap door. So him and the king open the door, they go into the door, there's some staircase leading down somewhere, and to underground. And then they come underground, and then there's like a pool of water. So they walk around the pool, and they, you know, go around it, and then they see another door to a room. Aha, another trap door. So they open the door, and sure enough, who do they find in there? The paki. What is he doing? He's bowing down to a cross. It's like the Christians. Ooh, this is supposed to be a Muslim faqih here. It's bowing down to a cross. So, of course, the king himself became cross, pun intended. And he calls over the faqih and he says, what are you doing? I see what you're doing, but wait a second, I have another question. I know what you're doing, and you're going to pay for that. But I said, but what's this pool of water that's outside the room here? So he says, well, before I come into this room to bow down to the cross, I like toivel, like I dip inside this pool to purify myself from all the impurifications of the Muslims before I bow down to the Christian cross. Well, needless to say, that was it. The king took him, hung him, that was the end of the paqih, and of course Yitzchak Nunes was saved, and he went home, and he lived at least happily ever after. So once again we see, person goes with Hashem, person fears Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of everything, gives him the right answers, the right things to say, they'll be accepted, and reveals to him what he needs to know, what he needs to be revealed to get through any situation. So that's the lesson that we learned today. That the Iker is our Emuna, Iker is our Bitachon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our trust in Him. If we follow His ways, then we have nothing to worry about. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of things. Everything will work its way out. And Mitzvah Hashem, if we do so, we can look forward to HaKadosh Baruch Hu making everything work out in a total and complete way and bring us the Mashiach Tzidkenu, b'mehirah v'yameinu.